Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. No pills gonna cure my ill.
KFI AM 640. It's Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. You have the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. And we are live here from our studios in Burbank. With me, of course, we've got Eric on the board, our board op. We got Brooke producing. Layla's in the newsroom. We are not out somewhere at some game. We are here with you.
And we're definitely not at a Super Bowl party.
Did you say the S word? Oh, no. We get sued.
I can't say that.
We get sued, Brooke, for saying that. So let's call it the S word today.
The S word.
The big game.
It's the big game.
I will switch to the big game from now on.
Exactly. So I understand, Brooke, it's a football game.
It's a big football game.
Oh, it is. And I noticed there is a bird on your shirt that looks a lot like the American Eagle. Is this team playing in this football game?
Oh, Wendy, no.
No.
No. No. Okay, so why are you wearing that eagle? Wait. Let me guess. I think I know this.
Am I waiting for you to guess?
Philadelphia Eagles? Is that right?
Good girl.
Okay,
good
the
girl.
Only wrong reason I know this, because I used to host a show called Splurge for like some fabulous network. We went to a guy's house who was known as the biggest Eagles fan ever, and he bought bits and pieces of their stadium and seats, and the mascot came, and he built a big homage with big screens. He built his own sports bar in his house, basically.
That's nice.
And I remember that. He was really an Eagles fan.
That's goals to me, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty cool.
It was really, really cool. And so the Eagles are not playing.
No.
So who are you hoping for?
Well, A, it's just a big football day, so I'm sporting my team. But also, like, okay, so Andy Reid, who is the coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, used to coach at Eagles.
So I have that connection.
Yeah.
Are you hoping for Kansas then?
I am, yes.
Kansas City. And who are they playing, Layla?
They are playing the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, I know. Shannon likes that. She has a tattoo with 49 on her. We're going to analyze that someday.
She's at the game.
Farron is at the game.
Yeah.
Check her Instagram.
My goodness.
She's there. Okay, but for the rest of us, can we talk about the rest of our lives and everything else going on? If you have been following my social media at Dr. Wendy Walsh, at Dr. Wendy Walsh, you will see that I have started a 30-day humility challenge. And this came about when a friend of mine recently said to me, isn't it interesting how social media filters out the sad? And it really struck with me. And you know, I have teenage girls in my house. I have one kid off at college, the other one in the house, and we have a 15-year-old German exchange student with us. And I watch how their mental health and their lives are, you know, they're so cognitively integrated into their phones that there's no difference between their digital world and their real world, because their brain literally developed with it. And their moods can be affected by it. And I'm seeing the filters. Like, it is cute when my kid puts a filter on me and I look like I'm 30. It's great, but I don't want to post that. And so I thought, in homage to these girls, that I would start a hashtag humility challenge. And every day I'm trying to post something real. You can go on my social media to see what I've done. I'm only up to day 4 so far. So I got 26 more days to fail and report on it and be an imperfect, real, authentic human. But today I just posted a picture of my really white sheets, because you didn't want to see me actually in bed with no makeup and my big old glasses on. But I was scrolling through social media this morning in bed, and I decided to admit to everybody that even though I have spent a week talking about the passing of Kobe Bryant and the 8 other people, including his daughter, and analyzing it and coming up with strategies for coping, I really hadn't felt it. And I think the point I want to make here is that we shouldn't judge how people mourn when people mourn, how long it takes, how long the numbness lasts. Obviously, my default mode was to go into an analytic thinking brain and not necessarily a feeling brain. But in the comfort of my own bed with my pajamas this morning, I clicked through to Vanessa Bryant's Instagram, and I watched videos of Chi-Chi playing basketball. With her dad's moves, her dad's body type, it was like eerie to watch. I mean, this young woman would have taken over the WNBA someday. And I saw a mother holding her baby and her toddler and happy family pictures, and I just lost it. I just started crying. I mean, tears down to my chin bone. Do we have a chin bone? Anyway, I want us all to know that it's okay to mourn the loss of somebody who's famous, somebody we may have never met. Now, the day that Kobe passed away, I did post a picture of me kissing his broken wrist way back in 1997 when he just joined the team. I went to training camp on behalf of a show I was hosting called Extra, and they sent me to training camp to interview this young, hot, new player, and he was just coming back to things after a broken wrist. And of course, making cutesy TV, I said, I know the perfect cure for a broken wrist. He said, you do? And I said, yes. And I grab his hand and I kiss his wrist, and he, perfectly good at working the media, moved his hand around and said, whoa, it's all better now. And then we actually played a little man-to-man, man-to-skinny blonde woman who can't play basketball, actually, for the cameras. And so that's my only time that I met Kobe Bryant, but I did get to play a little one-on-one with him, which is kind of cool. But I know that all of us feel a loss, and some of us feel weird if we didn't meet him, if we didn't know him. And how is this? And it's because even if we don't know celebrities, we do know celebrities. They have been a part of our lives. It's a part of us dying when a celebrity passes away. And we feel connected to our favorite celebrities because they are connected to memories we have, moments in our past, things that happened at a certain age and you remember what they were doing at the time. Or maybe it was your dad or brother or uncle who was so obsessed with Kobe. And now you're realizing that with Kobe's passing lies the goodbye to maybe your grandfather or father who may have passed away earlier and the last connection you may have to them. And in some ways, because of social media, we really feel intimately connected with celebrities today. And I know with my own humility challenge, I'm disclosing some very personal things about my thoughts, as so many celebrities do. And so it's quite understandable how we can feel so connected to people we don't even know. And the feelings of loss and grieving and coping with those feelings are okay. And everybody's going to do it in their own way and in their own time. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what Vanessa may be going through, or some of you, if you've ever lost someone close to you, especially a child, but specifically if you're a parent, a mother or a father who's both grieving and having to keep it together for the kids. Really tough stuff. And also, let's get into mental toughness, both with the athletes out there participating in that game, the S-word game today, and also the rest of us, how we can learn to be mentally tough in our life. I've got some tips for you. That's when we come back. So stay with me. I've got you locked in here for the next 2 hours. I've got you. Everything's going to be okay. You are listening to Dr. Wendy Walsh on the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
KFI AM 640. This is Dr. Wendy Walsh. Thanks for being with me. What is love? I don't think there's any love stronger than a parent's love for their child. And if you have known anybody, or if you are somebody who has lost somebody and you're grieving at the same time you're trying to parent, I have a few words for you. Or if you're somebody who knows somebody like that and you might want to help them. I got to say that mothering or fathering while you're grieving is especially complex, and it's pretty darn heartbreaking because the world seems to be holding itself together around you and you're falling apart inside, but you're supposed to keep it together and be strong for these little ones, right? One recommendation that I have is remember this. We are cooperative breeders. It takes a village. Rely on your village as much as possible, especially if you're feeling emotionally unstable. But secondly, not only rely on your village, but be very specific about your needs and how you want to be supported and how you do not wish to be supported. Many years ago, the sister of a friend of mine, coincidentally also named Vanessa, lost her husband in a terrible car crash, and she was left with four kids under the age of 12. And while it was a terrible grieving time for her, I remember my friend reporting that she would get it together enough, and she was having kind of a good day or a good moment, and she'd go out to the grocery store and be just trying to have some sense of normalcy. And then she'd run into somebody who would say, "Oh, I'm so sorry to hear." And then she was expected to fall deep into her grieving again, deep into her sadness, because the person was bringing it up again. Here's how we grieve. We don't stay sad all the time. It ebbs and it flows. And there are times where you have to put it in a compartment and go on with your life. And that's okay. And if you see somebody who's quote unquote supposed to be grieving having a laugh or a happy moment, it's okay. This is how their brain refuels. This is how their brain reorganizes, okay? So find out how they want, you know, sort of check them out. See what energy they're sending out before you immediately go, "Oh, I'm so sorry to hear of your loss," because you might be pulling them back down into that hole that they're digging themselves out of. But the most important thing is speak to kids honestly, not only about your own feelings and what you're happening within you, but also what they're feeling. The worst thing you want to do for all kids is to say, "Oh, let's just be normal. Let's pretend nothing's happening." Because kids know something very big is happening and they need to have outlets to discuss this. All right. That's all I want to say about that. But I do want to say something else. And that is how we all can do better at coping with the things that are tough in life. And there has been some research on what we call mental toughness. Now, a lot of this research has been done on people who are exceptionally mentally tough, high-level athletes, Navy SEALs, right? People who literally face death or physical stress and are able to get past it and achieve, right? So the researcher? Peter Clough, C-L-O-U-G-H, and he has done a lot of work on what he calls the four C's of mental toughness. Now, ask yourself how much you have any of these four C's. The first is challenge. And what he says when he says challenge is, do you have the ability to reframe potential threats as opportunities for growth and mastery? You know, everything that we face in life is given to us so that we can solve this problem. Our brains are natural problem solvers. So if when faced with a challenge, you go, "Oh no, why me? Why is this happening to me all the time?" Right? That sort of flooding of all the time. Or if you say, "Huh, this is an interesting problem. What can I do to solve this problem? How can I get around this one? Am I going to become stronger on the other side of this?" People with high mental toughness face challenges this way. The second C is commitment. And this means, can you persist? Are you going to keep pursuing your goals no matter what obstacles, no matter what setbacks are there? Professional athletes do it. Navy SEALs do it. Entertainers do it. Hey, people who have suffered a physical injury and make a comeback in life. People who have been fired from their jobs and make a comeback in life. People who reinvent themselves in midlife and make a comeback in life. They have a commitment to their goals. And this is a sign of mental toughness. The third C, control. Oh, we all need to work on that sometimes. It means, do you have the skills of emotional regulation? Do you know how to cope with stress? And actually, when we come back after the next break, I want to talk about some stress coping techniques that all of us can learn, and they're pretty darn simple. And the fourth C in mental toughness is having self-confidence. Now, that's pretty self-explanatory, but, you know, plenty of us were raised by critical parents who thought, oh, we better make sure that our kid doesn't think too much of themselves, make sure they have a lot of humility, none of that self-pride. And so rolling around in the back of our head are these critical voices, and we need to replace them with, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I know I can. I deserve to have it. Those are the four C's of mental toughness. When we come back, I'm going to give you some techniques that Navy SEALs have used to increase those four C's of mental toughness, and also some stress coping techniques. Stay with me. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Can't you see I'm burning, burning?
KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. Thank you to those on social media. My social is at Dr. Wendy Walsh, at Dr. Wendy Walsh, who tell me, sorry, I won't be there today, Dr. Wendy. I'm watching the Super Bowl, but I promise I'll listen to it on the app later. I love it. So they're like checking in with me to let me know that they're not here at the meeting today, and but they'll make it a little later and they'll listen in, which is nice, which you can always do that if you miss being live with me. But, you know, it's better to be here together, one team. And I want to thank our mother, producer Brooke, because she, in honor of the S word game today, has cooked up food for us that for me is perfect because it's all keto. Brooke, thank you. We've got some buffalo, my mouth is on fire, cauliflower that I love, some deviled eggs, some guacamole, which I'm eating with a fork because that's how I do it. And thank you for bringing it in. And so if you hear me swallowing and chewing, that's all that is. All right, talking about mental toughness. So they've done a little research on how Navy SEALs, now think about it. The Navy SEALs literally have to face near death all the time. They put them like in the bottom of pools or oceans, and then they take off their tank and regulator and they leave them and they make them blind and they have to find their way up and live. And if you're a Navy SEAL, I know I'm bastardizing all the amazing things that you do, but I've heard that the training is pretty darn intense. So in interviewing a lot of them, in fact, a former Navy SEAL platoon commander, James Waters, came up with these four things that Navy SEALs do to survive all this. And we could all stand to do this on a regular basis every day. One is talk positively to yourself. Now, those of us who were raised with good, consoling, loving parents do have positive voices inside ourselves. And there are moments in my life when there's stress, don't laugh, but I literally will hear my mom going, it's okay, sweetie. It's all right. We got this. I'm here. And literally, I hear her voice. She's been dead 20 years. It's in my head and it's now become part of me. Now, if you are somebody who is unlucky in that department, this is the time to retrain your brain, to reparent yourself, and just poke in those positive voices, the ones that say, you can do this. It's going to be okay. You deserve this. It's going to be all right, right? Secondly, Navy SEALs are very good at setting goals. And one of the things that many people do, I think mistakenly, is sit back and let life take them along. Now, I admit, there are times when it feels like you're fighting and fighting to get things done and nobody seems to be supporting you, that you need to lift your paddle and let the river take you. Because around the bend, there's going to be somebody who can support you, right? But the rest of the time, you need to at least be heading on a path. When I hear people say things like, you know, I'm just waiting for the right job that makes sense with what I want to do and with my degree and whatever, I'm like, you know who gets jobs? Working people. People who are working get more work. So take any job, especially if you're a young person just graduated and you're sitting at home and your mom says you can keep eating out of her fridge, stop it. Just take whatever job is out there. I don't care if you're taking membership cards at a gym, if you are waiting tables, but particles in motion attract particles in motion. So do something and you will find your goal along the way. But if you're sitting still, you can't see all the forks in the road. So do set your goals. Now, practice visualization. This is something that athletes do. Artists do it before they perform. And that means closing your eyes and actually seeing yourself achieve what your goal is. Now, when I was a kid, I think I was like 13 years old. We moved to this new neighborhood and it had a public like club swimming pool for the neighborhood thing, like a teen clubhouse and a pool. And they had a rule that if you were under a certain age, you could not be at the pool alone without an adult with you. And I learned to swim really late, folks. I don't know what it was with my parents. I didn't learn to swim till I was like 9 and a half or something. I was really late. And so I was all of like 11 or 12, somewhere in there. And you had to go to the lifeguard and say, I'd like to take the swim test, please. And so if you could swim 2 laps, it was an Olympic size pool to the end and back, then you could be at the pool with no adult with you. Well, I tried. And I tried, and I embarrassed myself with the teenage lifeguard who was like, you put your foot down, you stopped, and because even you have to do it in the shallow end, right? And so I got scared every time, and I couldn't do it. And one night, as I was falling asleep, I remember this distinctly because it's still stuck in my brain today. Over and over, I just pictured myself doing those two laps. And then I went to sleep. And because I thought about it all the way into sleep. And while I was asleep, I dreamt that I swam 20 laps instead of 2. It was just like Olympic girl dreams at 12 years old. I could do these 20 laps. So I show up at the pool the next day. Gosh, by darn it. Didn't I swim 20 laps the next day in front of that damn lifeguard who's standing over there with his pimply face and his Cheetos going, you know, you don't have to keep going. But I did. Because I dreamt it and I did it. So visualization really does work. However, visualization without practice does almost nothing. So maybe all my attempts at the pool were helpful. You know, they did studies where they showed people dance moves on YouTube and tried to get them to copy it. And they say, oh, yeah, I can do that. Even dancers. Yeah, I can do that. But it was the ones that they experientially showed and had them do a few steps, add a few more, that did way better. You can't learn by just watching or just visualizing. You have to practice and practice in small steps. So let's say you're afraid of public speaking. You're going to try speaking at the dinner table, maybe a family celebration. You're going to give a toast and then you're going to move on to a small group in a conference room of your coworkers. And you're going to have some supporters around you who are cheering you on. And eventually you'll move up to standing on a big stage and being able to speak. I know a lot of people suffer from that kind of performance anxiety. As you can imagine, I do not. So anyway, that is how you can learn to have better mental toughness. Now, how much time do we have left? Eric, are we near the end? Oh, we should break. I didn't see Brooke in her little sign, but I felt like it was near the end. When we come back, let me talk about some stress coping strategies for you. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640.
Oh, help me. Doctor, I'm damaged. There's a pain where there was a heart.
KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. A little housekeeping business. You can follow me on social media at Dr. Wendy Walsh. You can also subscribe to my newsletter. You just text the number 42828, like that would be the phone number, 42828. And you type in the word Dr. Wendy and you automatically will get. I don't send newsletters very often. I do it myself. It's a pain in the butt. It takes too much time. But once in a blue moon, I remember. And I only do if it's good stuff. Or if I really need you. Like, I'll probably be sending another one in a week or so to remind everybody that I am on the planning committee of the Tastes of St. Joseph 2020 Food and Wine Fair in Culver City on Thursday, February 27th. From 6:30 to 10:30, please come. You can get a ticket anywhere online. Eventbrite is always a good one. You just type in Taste of St. Joseph. And the money benefits the homeless service provider that they are, but also specifically their culinary training program. St. Joseph Center actually trains low-income and formerly homeless neighbors to be excellent workers in professional kitchens, and then they get them jobs in professional kitchens. So it's a really, really worthy cause. February 27th, it's a Thursday. Come on out. I'll be there. There's a photo, a kissing photo booth. And not to say that I'll be giving anybody any kisses, but it depends how much you donate to the St. Joseph Center. I can, you know, it's charity. It's charity. All right. Has anybody had a really rough January so far? It has been so stressful. I was at a Chinese New Year party last night. Chef Katie Chin, who's going to be at Taste of St. Joseph at her house. And everyone's like, I'm so exhausted. January was like we fit in a whole year of work in January. It was like people came back from the holiday and went crazy. And everyone's tired. I'm tired because, you know, we started the semester with teaching and there's always stress around that. All my clients and jobs came back on board in the last couple weeks. And I have been leaving the house at like 5:30 in the morning and getting back at 9 at night and just exhausted and spending all those hours on the freeways around Los Angeles, as you guys do too. So I thought I would do a little segment on some stress coping strategies, so that we can all learn to manage our stress a little bit better. There are basically three kinds of coping strategies for stress. One is calming coping strategies. Two is emotion-focused coping strategies. Three is problem-solving coping strategies. So let's start from the top. The first thing you need to do to reduce stress, obviously, is calm yourself down. And we know how to do that, right? Take a freaking deep breath. Three of them. In fact, one of the best ways to tweak your vagus nerve, not your Las Vegas nerve, your vagus nerve and calm you down is to inhale for 5 seconds, hold for three, exhale for seven. Here we go. In everybody. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and hold. 2, 3, 4. Out we go. Exhale. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And again and again. Do it a few times and you'll be amazed how you instantly start to feel more relaxed. Aromatherapy, massages, hot baths. Here's what doesn't work, and I learned it this week. I had a very stressful week and I would get home frazzled off the freeway. And what do you think the first thing I did? I would go pour a glass of wine, some nights a glass of tequila, and thinking, I'm so stressed. I've had so much coffee all day. I need to have something. And then it made the morning like hell. So I haven't had a drink in the last 4 nights and I've had deep sleeps where my brain has recovered and I feel so good. So this hectic week that's coming up, I'm going to do it without having drinks. And then Friday night, I will have a drink to celebrate that I did it. And it's more relaxing to not drink. It really is. I'm going to take magnesium when I get in to calm my brain down. Okay. Number two, emotion-focused coping strategies. These are the kind of coping strategies where you focus on changing your emotions instead of changing the situation or the problem, right? The problem's going to be there. There's nothing you can do about it. So the only thing you can do is reframe it. And this might mean maintaining a sense of humor about it. You ever call a friend when something really bad is happening and you're like, you wouldn't believe, and you're like laughing as you're telling it because it's so ludicrous, right? That you can't believe that your boss said that or did that. And the two of you are like laughing over it, right? That's called emotion-focused coping strategy. It's cultivating optimism. It's changing your perception of the situation. Other techniques you can use to do emotion-focused is journal. You know why journaling works? Because once you put something down on a piece of paper, it's not really inside you. You're now looking at it with an observing eye. So as you're watching it, there's a little separation between you and it, and it can help you gain perspective. Practicing just random acts of kindness, it actually cheers you up. I've been doing that a lot lately, just tipping heavy, giving money to charity, complimenting total strangers on the street. I know you think I'm weird, lady whose boots I told you were really cute the other day in a parking garage, no less. I couldn't help myself. I'm like, those boots are so cute. But it made me feel better to put positive energy out there. Okay, third way, solution-focused or problem-solving-focused coping strategies. This is where you work to change the situation. Now, it will create more stress if you try to change a situation that you can't. What is that saying? God grant me the strength to change what I can, the and the wisdom to know the difference. Look it up, Brooke, right? the faith to
the serenity prayer, right?
The serenity prayer, yeah. Right. That's basically what it is knowing what you can change. And if you can change things, do. That means look at your calendar and practice some good time management strategies. Put some relaxation into your busy week, even if it's, you know, one day this week when I was so stressed, I picked up teenagers from school. They said they wanted to go thrifting. And I'd been driving all day since early in the morning. The last thing I wanted to do was go find some thrift shop somewhere. But I hadn't spent much time with my teenagers, so I had to do it. So I go to this thrift store down in Redondo Beach, and I say to them, knock yourselves out trying on these old jeans. I am going to walk towards the beach. I get to the beach, and I find one of these trees that was halfway blown over from the wind, so it was kind of like a bed. And I laid in this tree under the canopy with my arms flopped back beside me. And I let that tree caress me. Did you know that when the wind blows, the tree kind of sways like a hammock a little bit? I laid there for 20 minutes till the kids texted me and said, we're ready to go. And I just totally refueled. And then I took some friends out for a birthday dinner, and I was just totally refueled. So time management, stress reduction, use good conflict resolution strategies if your stress is about a conflict, right? That means be calm, think it out. Don't be impulsive. Take your time. Get advice from others. All that stuff. Brooke, what's the score?
The score. We're tied. We're heading into halftime in just a few seconds, and it's tied 10-10.
Because everyone's going to leave to go watch the halftime show now and the commercials. You know, you can listen to this whole show later on the app. It's always going to be on the iHeartRadio app.
I have a serenity prayer, too.
Keeping it. Please say the serenity prayer for me.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Excelente. Thank you very much. All right, when we come back, I know I talk about attachment style a lot, but did you know that your attachment style influences your ability to apologize? I'm going to talk about apology, forgiveness, and what it might feel like to you when we come back. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Fluffy bread, fresh tortillas, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real. But Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and seriously, great taste. Made from a new recipe using heart-healthy olive oil and resistant wheat starch that acts as a prebiotic fiber to promote gut health, Hero Bread products have more of the dietary fiber and protein you want without the net carbs and sugar you don't. There's something for every craving. Sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas, plus monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites with no compromise. Like the 2-gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1-gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. That's HEROPOD at HERO.co.
AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. I forgot to tell you that if you follow me on Instagram, on the commercial breaks, I check you out. And if I like what I see, and I think everybody should follow you, then I give you a little mention, a little shout out. So I've been talking about stress reduction, and I get followed by a hypnotherapist and relationship counselor named, I'm going to say his name wrong, John Sahakian, S-A-H-A-K-I-A-N, John Sahakian, and he has lots of good advice for you on his feed, and people are commenting that they love his meditation classes, so he must be doing a lot of good in the world. And I'll just throw in there, he's really good looking, so that doesn't hurt. Okay, anyone else wants to follow me, please do. I will check it out and give you some news you can use. Apologizing. It's really, really hard. Some people apologize too much And some people apologize not enough. Brooke, what category would you put yourself in? I put her on the spot there.
You did. I was trying to do a featured segment.
Okay.
Tell me the question again, please.
Some people apologize too much. Some people not enough. Are you one of either of those or somewhere in the middle?
I do think I'm pretty good about being in the middle.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah. Eric, where are you?
Definitely on the not enough. If I don't think I'm wrong, I'm not apologizing.
Oh, you don't do it just for cooperation?
No.
No.
No. No.
Layla,
no.
What about you?
I think when I know I'm wrong, I will definitely fess up and say, I'm so sorry. You know, I messed up. But I'm also one of those people when I say I'm sorry for random things, like you're in the grocery store aisle and someone's in the way and you're like, I'm sorry, when you're trying to get by. Why am I saying I'm sorry?
Right. Well, I'm Canadian, so I apologize to lamps. I say I'm sorry to lamps all the time.
So
when
you understand what I'm saying,
I get it.
Right?
Yeah.
I hate that I do that. I don't like that I'm always saying that because I'm not sorry. Move your basket, lady.
Well, the truth is we've just proven the research that men tend to apologize less than women do, but women often do it for cooperation because men build a social ladder, right? They have the alpha and the competing men on the ladder, and women form this little village and circle that all care for kids together, right? So we're more likely, and this is why Canadians apologize all the time. I often say, when people say, well, what's the difference culturally? Why are Canadians so nice? You know, we have this reputation. They're not all nice, by the way. But partly, I believe that in America, the other, or the person you were having conflict against, was always another person or another group. Whereas in Canada, it was always the environment. And if you weren't friends with your neighbor, you could die in a snowbank. Even today, if you need to dig out your car in a storm, you better know your neighbors and be able to knock on that door, right? So we needed it because the environment was just so difficult to survive in that we all needed to cooperate that much more. And so we say sorry all the time. Sorry, sorry, sorry. And I find it's very effective. And when I first started therapy as a young woman, I was, you know, here in California, and the therapist kept saying, like, why do you apologize so much? I'm really worried about your self-esteem. And I'm like, no, it's cultural. I'm Canadian. That's just what we do. So for me, it wasn't related to self-esteem. Now, another thing that's interesting about the way we apologize and how we receive apologies has to do with our attachment style. I talk about attachment style all the time. Brief review, in case you've missed it. We all come into the world with a biological predisposition to attach to others in a certain way. And then that genetic predisposition is often enlivened or suppressed by our environment. Our environment are our parents, our primary caregivers, right? So if you come into the world as a baby filled with the genes for anxiety, a high-need baby, we call them, that need to be loved and rocked and cared for and can't stand for a second to be in a wet diaper or have a hungry belly, and you have parents who read a book that said, let them cry it out, it's good for their lungs, toughens them up, they're fine, then that baby may grow up to have a lot of anxiety around attachment and believe, because this becomes a blueprint for love that we take into our adult romantic lives, and then they'll grow up to find people who will disappoint them because that's familiar to them and love becomes painful. You might have a baby who needs a little more independence and space. You might have a parent that totally smothers them, that puts them on a strict feeding schedule and shoves a bottle down their throat even when they're not hungry, that swaddles them so tight because they look cold. And before you know it, that person grows up to be like, I think relationships are feel engulfing, smothering, and intrusive, right? And you've got everything in between. So what's interesting is how we process the apology is linked to our attachment style. So I do want to say that there's also this group of us, about 20 or 30% of the population, who have what's called a secure attachment style, where they can give love comfortably and receive love comfortably. They're able to regulate their emotions very well. And we would all hope to hook up with this person because they make us feel great because they like themselves, right? So people who are more anxious and preoccupied with relationships tend to have trouble regulating their emotions. They get emotionally hijacked very easily. They have very strong emotions. They desire and they welcome an apology. They need it all the time because they're angry babies when you haven't called them fast enough or texted back fast enough. But on the other hand, they have trouble taking in this apology and fully believing it. So these people will get mad even after you try to apologize to them, right? So if the anxious, preoccupied person is doing the apology, though, get clear for your motive. Are you doing it just to bring someone closer to you? Or did you really do something wrong and you want to be forgiven? Are you just trying to get back in their good graces? Because that's attachment anxiety. That's not really about apology. But if you're being apologized to and you have a lot of anxiety around relationships, don't escalate and reengage. If somebody apologizes, find a way to believe them. Now, there are other people who are more avoidant and dismissing, and they're very uncomfortable feeling vulnerable and experiencing interpersonal conflict. They just want to move on. They don't want to apologize. They don't even want to be apologized to, right? So again, if you are this dismissive, avoidant person, get clear about your motive. If you just wish your anxious lover would just suck it up and move on, don't apologize just because you just want him to move on. Think about it and spend some time getting comfortable saying something. And when you apologize, don't do this. Dismissive people do. They go, look, I'm sorry, but you made me. Like, they turn it around and they somehow blame the person in some way, right? So forget that word but, and forget that that this person is anxious, right? I think all of us could stand to understand our own attachment style and understand how we have a model inside our head for love that our partner may not have the same model, but we may find each other anyway. Interestingly enough, the anxious person is most likely to be sexually attracted to the avoidant person because it lives out their very familiar worst nightmares. And the avoidant, dismissive person is most likely to be attracted to the anxious person. And this couple may stay together for a really long time because they're constantly in this chase against each other, right? And so I think if you do not know your attachment style, there's a really good attachment test online. It's by a researcher named Chris Fraley, who's constantly collecting data. Don't worry, he's not going to collect any demographic data on you except your gender and age. But the way if you just Google the words Chris Fraley attachment test, it'll come up. And it's like a 36-question test where he'll ask you to think about the relationship you had with your mother when you answer it. And then again, do it again, but think about the relationship you had with your father. Then do it again, but think about the relationship you have with your best friend. And then do it again. And think about the relationship you have with your lover or your most recent relationship lover person. And then the computer does this whole algorithm and mishmashes it together. And you'll be able to see how much fear you have around intimate connection, how much avoidance you may have, or how much feeling of security, how much anxiety you may have. And it's very helpful because it puts this like magnifying glass on some of the things that we do in our attachment life. And I believe that attachment theory, it's a psychological theory, is the best lens for almost everything in life, really. It is. Okay, enough on that. Brooke, do we have a score? Anything change?
Halftime is on right now. Okay, Shakira is on the stage.
Okay.
Wearing an outfit that I probably couldn't fit in the last 30 years.
You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. This is the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. I'm here every Sunday live from 4 to 6, and you can always find it later on the iHeartRadio app. So we're live on the iHeartRadio app, but you can also click and see here past episodes. So there we go. How's your diet going into the new year? I can't believe I'm saying this on the day that the S word game is being played and nobody is eating healthy except us here. Because producer Brooke brought in keto for me, so I've got my deviled eggs.
I brought the party to the studio.
She did bring the party to the studio. And cauliflower, buffalo cauliflower,
yeah.
Avocado, all good fats and good protein, so I'm happy. But earlier, when was earlier? Oh, it was just yesterday. I was here and I was on the Fork Report with Neil Saavedra. And one of the questions he asked me was, you know, why are we all so overweight? And I want to remind everybody that for the most part, our biology has been hijacked by a processed food industry that deliberately fills its food with ingredients that are highly addictive and makes you want more. You know, in our anthropological past, salt, sugar, and bad fats were trace nutrients. And when we came upon them, we devoured them like crazy because they were kind of rare. Well, the modern food industry figured out what to do. And so they loaded food with all those things that we are biologically wired to crave. So there's that problem. The other thing is that the sugar industry back in 1969 got together, and in the times when ethically you could do these things, paid off three Harvard scientists to shine the light away from sugar and shine it instead onto saturated fat. So what followed were 30 years of our food industry saying you need to have low fat, low fat, low fat, low fat. Let me tell you, folks, I am so skinny. I have trouble keeping weight on. I eat a high fat diet, but I'm sugar free and I'm grain free. So partly it's the quality of the food. But then Neil asked me, well, you know, he said he eats when he's sad. He eats when he's happy. He eats when he's mad. It's sort of an emotional thing for him. And I want to remind people that emotional eating also impacts all of us. Remember, when we were young baby toddlers, we sucked our thumb, we sucked a bottle, we found ways to gratify ourselves when we were feeling troubled in some way. And some of it lingers on into adulthood with some of us. Now, I want to remind you that the first thing you need to do when you say you feel hungry is learn to distinguish between emotional hunger and physical hunger. And here are some signs. Emotional hunger is sudden and it's impulsive. You need to have that thing right away, that particular food you crave. But the other thing about emotional hunger is it's not satiated with food. And in fact, it's an emotional trigger, but then you eat and then it's followed by a feeling of guilt. And then you need to eat more to take care of the guilt. So the question is, how do you deal with it? Well, first of all, when you have that kind of emotional hunger and you have identified it, you need to ask yourself what thought you were having right before, or what event happened, or who said what to you, okay? Get to what we call the activating trigger and think about it. Then move it into your thoughts. What was going through your mind at the time? What do you believe about what they said? And then focus on the consequences. What would happen if you ate that now? There's some researchers think that we need to spend more time thinking about the negative effects of eating. Because at that moment when you make the decision to eat the crappy pizza, instead of, oh, Blaze pizza I discovered has keto crusts. It's my new favorite thing, Blaze pizza. I think LeBron James is an investor. It's amazing. I'm so happy. Anyway, enough of that. When you choose to eat the crappy pizza, you sort of discount how bad it's going to be for you. So holding on to actually the negative thought that it's bad for you could help you a lot. And the most important thing you want to do is dispute whatever logic you have. Like, it doesn't matter anyway, or I'll exercise tomorrow, or tomorrow, blah, 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 blah. Dispute it and come up with an action plan to compensate, right? That's what you need to do, is you need to think about the feelings that happened before. Think about, like, think, get it out of your emotional brain, put it into your prefrontal cortex. Think about what's happening. And come up with strategies. Come up with alternate snacks. Have them ready. Yes, the carrot sticks and the cucumber sticks and the hummus. Always have it in your fridge. And when you get that emotional pang, don't grab the chip. Grab the cuke. That's what I say. All right. That's all I want to say about weight loss, except to say it's not your fault. Okay? It's a very unique sort of perfect storm of genes, the food industry, and emotions and psychology. All right, there's been a lot of research to say that married people are better off, that they live longer, have better health along the way, and accumulate more wealth. Well, that is true. However, why? Is it marriage that is doing this or something else? I'll explain when we come back. You're listening to the...
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18
plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. Okay. What time are we at? Oh, we have two more segments. Oh, I have so much to tell you. Okay, we have time. There is a listener. You know, I was talking about visualization and how mental toughness, whether you're trying to quit a bad habit, take up a new habit, mental toughness can really help. And visualization can be particularly helpful. So a listener wrote to me on Facebook. Her name is Laura Kramer. She said she's listening to the show right now. And she said visualization was how she quit smoking. And she says that back when she was a teenager, a cute boy that she had a big time crush on in like junior high, because that's when the tobacco industry targets our youth, folks. You know, most people don't start smoking in their 20s or 30s, right? If they don't catch you as an adolescent, they don't have you as a customer. And that's why this whole teen vaping crisis, don't get me going. You know, you've been following my social media. You know, I'm an advocate for anti-flavored e-cigarettes. Okay, so a cute boy in junior high offered Laura a cigarette. And of course, she took it because she wanted to be cool because she had a crush on him. So when she was trying to quit smoking many years later, anytime she wanted to visualize something, she would go back to that day, that first cigarette day, and she would imagine that when he offered her the cigarette, she said, "No thanks, I don't smoke. No thanks, I don't smoke." She did this visualization, she told me, a few times a day, and she was able to quit after 26 years of smoking a pack and a half a day. Kudos to Laura. That's amazing. She also said that one of her other rules was to not do anything else as this at the same time of smoking. Like, in other words, smoking when it was in the background of her life was just kind of there. And if she craved a cigarette, she would sit and just focus on the cigarette and the smoking. So no smoking while driving, no smoking while watering the lawn, no smoking while talking on the phone, no smoking unless she just had to sit and focus on it. And it probably made her nauseous. And it also made her self-aware. So much of what we do is about self-awareness. So, Laura, thank you so much, and thank you for letting me tell that story on the air. I appreciate it. All right. Are you single? Are you married? I've got some news for you. So you always hear the research, right, that married people live longer, have better health, report greater levels of well-being and happiness, and accumulate more wealth. That last one is for sure true, because it's way cheaper to maintain one household with two people than it is two separate households. Plus, divorce attorneys are expensive, child support, and all that. Right. However, there's a guy who wrote a book that I just ordered the book, so I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I read one of his blogs about it. The book is called Happy Singlehood, and it's filled with real research. His name is, I'm going to mess up his name, I'm sorry, Eliakim Kislev, PhD. His book is done by University of California Press, and I think I've ordered it. I was screening around, and I think I put it in my Amazon box or my shopping cart. I hope I closed off that and finished off the sale. Anyway, he talks about how some of this research is not quite true. He says there's something called the selection effect. In other words, happier people with better health and more wealth tend to get married. And yeah, there's lots of research to show that lower socioeconomic status people will have children outside of marriage and won't get married. And when you ask them why, they'll say, well, we don't have enough money to get married yet. As if marriage involves a big wedding, down payment on a house, and of course, giving birth to children is more imperative biologically, right? So there is a bit of a selection effect. And then he also looked at more data and asked the question, does marriage benefit everybody in the same way? And so we found research that asked people to report whether they were in a very happy marriage, a pretty happy marriage, and a not too happy marriage. And this research found that people in a not too happy marriage were twice as likely to report worse health and almost 40% more likely to die over the follow-up period compared to the very happy group. And here's the most interesting thing that he says. The not too happy married group had equal or even worse health and mortality risks when compared with those who were never married or were divorced or widowed. So there you go. The marriage effect doesn't work for everybody. It only works if you have a happy marriage. And who has happy marriages? Happy people. Funny how that works, huh? If you work on your own mental health, your own ability to manage emotions, your marriage will get happier. So then he asked the question, what about the divorced people and the separated people? How do the statistics bear out for them when it comes to health? He said that people who have been married and actually divorce are worse off than the never married group, right? Because divorce is very stressful. It is not good for your health. So he says really that we need to think about how singlehood is discriminated against, that there are social pressure to be married, there are policy deficits. Sometimes it's like subtle stuff. Like I've been a single mom for 15 years and just not getting invited to couples social gathering. I'm like a high school girl when I look at my social media and I see all my couple friends get together for dinner and not invite me. I'm like, huh, all my friends are together and they didn't invite me to their party. Right? I don't know if you're single and had this experience, but I do. Also, single people have to work extra hours, especially if we're single parents. I'm a single mom with four jobs, and people joke that I have no time. And they're like, why don't you date? I'm like, I have four jobs and two teenagers in the house. Come on, who's got time for that? And there also might be overt things that single people suffer from, like they don't get spousal health insurance benefits. They don't get to split the housework so much. They don't get to split the costs of a lot of things. Now, here's the positive sides of being single. And I want to get this guy on our show, Brooke. Can we work on trying to get him on our show? Because it's so interesting. Singles are more likely to experience personal growth, have more friends, report that they are generally more satisfied with their sex lives. They're also free to pursue their passions. And when they enjoy their solitude, they can take it whenever they want. There you go. There's some benefits if we're not at work all the time. All right. If you are in a relationship, when we come back, how to tell if your relationship is healthy or not. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Oh, help me, please, doctor. I'm damaged. There's a pain where there once was a heart.
KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. I didn't lie to you. I got you. We got through the 2 hours. We have one more segment to go. You can turn back to that game, that S word, if you need to, or if you already watched the game and listening to this later.
1310 San Francisco.
Oh, Shannon must be going crazy.
I'm sure she's excited.
I'm going to check Shannon Farron's Instagram. I'm sure she's going wild. I also wanted to say, if you are a member of the Los Angeles Press Club, this Thursday, it's my honor, I've been invited to give an award to the director of Bombshell, Jay Roach, and do an interview with him and some of the actors, which will be really cool. I don't know if you remember or know, you might want to go onto my website, drwendywalsh.com, and look at my talk about my role in the big changes at Fox News, shall we call it that? The big changes that Fox News happened and the beginning of the Me Too movement. So that's why I have been invited to meet him and give him an award and do an interview with him, which will be so much fun. So if you're a part of the Los Angeles Press Club, please come on out. I would love to see you. Okay. People often, when I had a private practice and people would come in with their relationship problems as individuals, and they would always say, is that normal or is that right? Right? Because remember, we have this blueprint for love inside our heads, which might not be real love. If your early life attachments were filled with longing or criticism or even physical abuse, then you will seek out relationships that create those familiar feelings because that's what you believe is love. And in fact, I've written three relationship books. And the first one, The Boyfriend Test, how to evaluate his potential before you lose your heart, was really that. It was a book about boundaries, like what kinds of behaviors let you know that somebody's healthy, that this could possibly be a safe relationship. Now, if you're in a relationship, and I always say that people will stay in a relationship as long as the warm fuzzies outnumber the cold pricklies by one. And it could be a terrible relationship to anybody on the outside watching, but you will stay if there's just slightly more positives, even though there could be another relationship out there that has 99% positives and one cold prickly, right? So here are the questions to ask yourself if you're trying to determine if your relationship is healthy. Does your relationship demonstrate respect? I mean, respect for each other really is the foundation of love. I mean, you might have differences, you might have conflict, but you're not name calling. You're not giving each other the cold treatment, the silent treatment for days. You respect each other even when you disagree. And it means consideration for the other person. Maybe when you're making a decision, you're checking in with the other person. You want this for dinner? Should we take a vacation here? You respect each other's needs. If somebody's dominating and calling all the shots, then no, it's not a healthy relationship filled with respect. The next question to ask yourself is, does my relationship demonstrate trust? That's the other foundation of love, really deeply trusting each other. If you're in a relationship where you're trying to check someone's phone, check their social media, looking on Find My, whatever it's called now, the new app, and see where they are, looking under the car seat to see if they're keeping an extra cell phone, this is not a relationship filled with trust. If you have to do this, this is not a healthy relationship. This is not real love. Also ask yourself, does your relationship support healthy boundaries? So you can't put boundaries on anybody else. Let's make this clear. You can only put boundaries on yourself. But if somebody doesn't respect your boundaries over and over and over and over, then that goes back to respect, right? Healthy boundaries means that you have the right to say no to certain things. You have the right to not be ridiculed. You have the right to not be punished. You have the right to not be coerced. It means that other relationships in your life are not negatively affected, that your relationship partner is not saying, you can't hang out with that person. You can't see that person, right? Having healthy boundaries. Does your relationship have it? Finally, is your relationship codependent or interdependent? So if you're trying to figure out what codependent means, it's one of those pop psych terms we hear all the time. It basically means that nobody can figure out whose problem is whose. You are so emotionally enmeshed that you're both a mess with no boundaries. And plenty of abusive relationships are also codependent because the two partners have an anxious attachment towards each other and they can't leave each other, but they're struggling to have some degree of autonomy. So there's all kinds of conflict, but also all kinds of abuse. These couples will say, well, we fight a lot, but we have really great makeup sex, right? And they'll have that for a moment, and then they'll be back into the pain. Being interdependent means being able to lean on each other's shoulders once in a while. But if something bad happens, knowing that you can self-regulate, knowing that you have an inner core of strength, and you will be okay. When you're interdependent, you do rely on each other. Because you trust the person, you know they'll be there for you, but you also maintain your own identity. You have your own kind of personal space in a relationship. Now, this is different from two people who have an avoidant attachment style, who get together and live like two polite roommates in their house where there's no threat of intimacy there. This is different. Interdependency is intimate, it's loving, it's respectful, but you don't crumble and fall apart with worry because your partner says something that hurts your feelings, right? And you stay connected. So that's the answer if your relationship is healthy. I did more research for this show and I didn't get there, which is Next week, I want to talk. Brooke, please remind me. Would you believe a lie? And why humans lie? And why sometimes it's okay and some lies are good. Like, you look great in those jeans, girl. And sometimes they're not so good, right? And we're going to talk about which kind of lies or how to spot a liar, especially if it's the negative kind of a lie. We'll be talking that next week. I want to remind you before I go, please come on out on February 27th to the Taste of St. Joseph Center. Just Google it. You can find tickets on Eventbrite. It's in Culver City from 6:30 to 10:30. It benefits the culinary training program of one of LA's largest homeless service providers. And we actually train low-income and formerly homeless neighbors and get them jobs in professional kitchens. We will have food and wine from over 34 different restaurants there and drink providers. I will be there the whole time. Come on out, please, please. I just implore you to buy a ticket to the Taste of St. Joseph Center. I'm begging. Is that okay? Is it okay to beg? I don't know. Anyway, it's always my pleasure to be with you. I'm here every Sunday from 4 to 6, and you can always find me on the iHeartRadio app. I also have an evolutionary psychology podcast that you will love called Mating Matters. Thanks for being with me. You've been listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.